the fastest, quickest, smoothest footwork. He's the Fred Astaire of martial of jiu-jitsu, the Fred Astaire of judo, but he's the Dom DeLuise of pizza eating. I don't get it. I don't get this.
Everybody wake up.
Time to wake up. Time to start the day.
Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie.
It's time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. What rhymes with Dougie? He's just so funny.
It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Live from Danger Studios. Coral Springs, and now you know.
We're the hottest show in the place.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
I said one, two,
everybody wake up.
Live from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida, it's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show, starring Dougie Almeida. Now, let's start the show.
Hey, thanks, Elgin. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm Dougie Almeida in Danger Studios. I'm joined by soccer great TR Thomas Rongen. What's up, buddy?
What's up? As your family calls you so appropriately on your wife's side, dog, what's up?
Dog.
What is dog? Dog?
Hey, we haven't seen each other.
Wow. Forever.
Right?
Correct.
And, you know, here's the funny thing, okay? Most of the people in my circle of life now know me as a comic. That's all they know about me. You know, they hear stories, maybe I went to college and I did stuff. But these guys have no idea that I was an athlete.
Well, you were. I'm telling you, one hell of an athlete, by the way. We go way, way back to, let's see here, Doug, where do I start? The old NESL, when the Fort Lauderdale Strikers basically collapsed and the NESL collapsed in the mid-80s, I had to find a way to stay somewhat relevant. Most European foreign players went back to their countries. I opened the soccer locker. I became a high school coach, South Plantation High, I remember. I became an assistant at Nova Southeast and eventually a head coach. And through all of that, there's Dougie Almeida.
Yeah.
One of the best goalkeepers that I've ever taught.
Oh, hold on a second.
So now we're talking, Doug, what, about 30 years ago, 35? Now, we've talked, but not as intimately as on the Dougie, what is this, the crazy show?
Yeah, the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Now, you've never been to my home, but it's not, you know, it's great when, you know, because you did. That's a great point. There's, you know, the NASL, you know, in the 70s was huge, right?
Correct.
77,000 people at Giant Stadium to see Pelé play, right? And it was amazing. And then, I mean, if we could put one or two reasons behind the fall of the NASL. What do you think it was?
Oh, Doug. I mean, you know, at one point in time in 1980, the league finally got a television deal. It got pulled, I remember vividly, at CBS halfway through the season because nobody watched. And bowling became actually more relevant than soccer. And that was the time when Warner Brothers communication with the Cosmins, which were the Harlem Globetrotters of football, the best players in the world, the Messis and Ronaldos were there. Pele, Beckenbauer, Cruyff, Kinalia, and the list goes on. Gerd Müller, Nene Kubiás, players I played with in New England. And there wasn't really a long-term vision. And I think that Warner Brothers and some other big hitters, i.e. Madison Square Garden that owned the Washington Diplomats that I played for in Cruyff, with Cruyff in 1980, decided that, you know, listen, if TV isn't going to be real relevant, then where do we want to make money? And that pretty much
was
a trickle-down effect. 82, 83, indoor stayed somewhat relevant for a few years, but the mid-80s, it was all over.
I thought indoor soccer was my savior. Like being 5'9" as a goalkeeper, you know what I mean? I thought, okay, maybe.
You remember me of a Canadian great, Tony Letary, who used to put his parrot in goal when penalties were being taken to freeze the goal. You remind me of him. Quick reflexes, a bigger body, a lower center of gravity, but both outdoors and indoors, Duck, on any given day, you were one hell of a goalkeeper.
Yeah, man. I somebody asked me, when did you stop playing? I was playing in an over 40 league, and I was a goalie, and there was a period of time, actually, and you weren't there. We had an alumni game some years ago. And this is back in the early 2000s when I was fighting. I was actually fighting in pro Muay Thai. And I had a listen, I was in better shape than I ever was.
10-0, baby.
Yeah,
10-0. This guy retired at the top of the game. 10-0 and said, forget it. That's it. Nobody's going to beat me.
That's it. I'm done at that number. And it's perfect. It's a perfect record. And I was I was in great. I had a strength coach, and then I played an alumni game. Some of the boys came out. You know, Mo was there.
Yeah.
I think Corey was there. There was a lot of the boys from our team, and we actually tied the Nova men's team.
Right.
The first half, we were tied 1-1.
Shows you.
And I had made fucking saves. Unbelievable. You know what I mean?
I believe it. I remember some road games, Doug, that you bailed us out. You bailed me out, actually. Our record was reflected due to the fact that we had a decent team, let's be real honest. FIU and some other Division I teams didn't want to play us, or at that time it was called College of Boca Raton,
right?
Because some of the influx of foreign players, mostly by South Africans, Ivan McKinley, yeah. and those guys played for Roy Wigamanson. I had a great squad with some Swedish guys as well, road trips for fun, because after games,
drink,
yeah, exactly. Let's get a six-pack, let's get some whiskey, and let's head back home to Nova. I crashed in some dorm rooms.
Yeah, you were like a live-in coach. Like I remember, there was a couple of times we were on the road, and you guys went out to a bar.
Yeah.
And got in trouble, right? Didn't you guys get into a fight at one bar?
Yeah, we were in West Virginia Wesleyan.
Yeah.
And I had longer blonde hair. I had a pierced ear. And I walked into a bar with about eight guys playing pool and two bartenders. And I go, I would like a beer, please. What do you want, boy? What do you say, boy? And these eight guys put all their cues down and came slowly walking towards me and pretty much said to me, and this is, Dougie, late 80s, early 90s, maybe.
86, 87, I'm
correct.
Guessing.
Maybe you want to get out of here because we're not really interested in any guys with accents.
Now, here
and
comes TR
earrings.
Into a bar in Westland, Virginia.
Can you imagine that?
And he looks like a fifth
correct.
Four.
I was looking for moonshine. I'm going, give me some moonshine, baby.
None of the boys were there? None of the college guys were there?
No, that night you guys weren't. I remember you guys slept like in a big room. Basically on the ground, we played West Virginia Wesleyan, which was basically the Nigerian national team, you remember?
Exactly.
Unbelievable. And we had
these
some
guys,
really
these
interesting
guys from West Virginia. Threat.
Yeah. We had some good pregame nights out as well. I mean, I remember one of my favorite cities, and the oldest city in the U.S., in Florida, is we just talked about Bob Mullen and
St. Augustine.
St. Augustine was a great.
I was just there this weekend.
Great rivalry, you know, against that team. Great city. You know, hey, listen, you play hard, you party hard. And that was our motto, and we did quite well, actually.
My first impression of the Swedes. Because I went to Flagler College my first 2 years of college, and then I came to Nova. And you were my coach my second year there, my senior year, more or less. And I transferred from there, and I meet these guys. And every preseason, which I dreaded, by the way, because I was not a runner. I'm not a guy who likes, you know what I mean? I was a goalkeeper.
I'm with you.
I wasn't the guy who like, yeah, let's go for a run, you know?
I'm with you.
Somebody says, hey, you want to go take a hike? You go fucking take a hike. I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm chill. So the Cooper test.
Oh, God.
The Cooper test, which is a 2 mile run.
Correct.
And you must complete it within 12 minutes.
Yes, that's correct.
So if you don't complete it in 12 minutes.
You have to do it again.
You got to do it again.
Which meant that Dougie ran it about 26 times. And at the end of the season, last game left, Dougie finally.
We did it. You talk about the Swedes. We'd be in the dorms hanging out. They'd be drinking vodka. Out of the bottle.
Yeah, yeah.
Smoking cigarettes.
Crazy.
Right? Like chimneys. And then they come, here comes Chris, Rickard running by lapping me for the fourth time. And I'm like, and I had been training all summer just for the Cooper test.
Well, they trained their bodies from very young to sustain lots of levels of alcohol, you know?
Yeah.
They travel outside of Sweden as often as they can because alcohol in Scandinavia is extremely expensive. So when they used to roll into, and this isn't necessarily our players, into Amsterdam, oh my God. The Swedes were notorious for just...
Now, wasn't Denmark known for a lot of Swedes go to Denmark to drink too?
Same thing,
that's
baby.
What I heard, yeah.
Go to Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Hanging out in Copenhagen where the beer's $1 versus $10 in Sweden. So, these guys trained their buddies well.
By the way, one of our listeners, Mark Boyer, former soccer player with me in the town down here. Yes, refereed a lot of refereeing. Thomas coached the Florida under 23 team.
Yes.
In the late 80s, and they beat the U.S. national team.
Yes, we did.
Zenon. Yeah, Zenon, I met that kid. Was amazing.
Zenon Luzniak.
That kid from Cooper City.
Yes, very, very good. Cooper City High, where I played him when I coached at South Plantation High, and was one of the players on that particular day.
Kid was skilled.
That was able to beat, you know, our U.S. national team, and that was pretty nice. I remember a great crowd. Was at Lockhart Stadium, where obviously the Strikers historically has played many games.
Yeah.
Fun atmosphere, and did well.
That was a great place. I found an old, my family and I and some family friends were in the cover of Kick magazine.
Oh, there you go.
I found it. I couldn't find it. I was trying to find it for years.
Old school
Google search.
Kick magazine.
And
you're
I
right.
found it. And I found the actual cover where it was a tailgating cover. And it was pretty cool. But thanks for the comment, Mark. You know, speaking of that, so we met at Nova. So we ended up, you know, in there. And we now, even after that, because some people said, Doug, have you ever played professional soccer? And I think the closest I think I came to playing professional soccer was with when you were coaching the Strikers. And if you recall, I actually made the first cut of that team.
Yes, you did.
Right?
The first cut. There were about 20 cuts, but you did make the first cut. You're right.
Yeah, thanks, man.
No. That was a tough decision, actually, you know, because there's a liking, but I also felt I had to do what was best for your team. And
yeah, now, do you remember why I got cut? I remember why. Do you remember why I got cut?
No, I don't.
Yeah?
Tell me.
All right. Well, we actually played like the Boca Under-19 team.
Yep.
I think at some off Yamato Road, that park that's right off Yamato and Military. Yep. And then they actually had, I mean, some of these kids, and they were like 6'5". This is the Under-19 kids from Boca, right? And there was a cross. They crossed the ball, and I came out, and the kid just headed it right. You know, I came out with no. You know, I mean, I knocked him. We ran into each other, but he still headed it in. And I remember it vividly. I'm in the locker room with you at Lockhart Stadium. We're sitting down after practice, and David Irving was there too, by the way. And David Irving was completely naked, as he was sitting in a chair next to you, and his balls and, you know, everything is just out.
Certain things never change,
you know? Yeah, and I'm sitting there like, let's have a talk, and it was basically because, you know, it's just, Dougie, you know, you're like, I'm not to butcher your accent, but it's like, Dougie, you know, when you lose a corner kick to an under-19 player, you're not really at the caliber we need. Yeah, and that was my last.
That actually makes sense. I mean, There is a difference between the college game. There's a difference between the NIA and professional soccer, obviously.
Right.
And yes, there's been some goalkeepers that we all remember, even Keylor Navas right now, who's smaller, the Costa Rican international, played for Real Madrid, now for PSG. Jorge Campos, the flamboyant Mexican international. But if you look at the game right now and you look at, you know, the better goalkeepers internationally, none of them are smaller than 6'3", 6'4", you know, and that becomes important because on the next level, the balls get flighted in quicker, there's more strength, it happens quicker, and on college you can get away with mistakes here and there because you had great reflexes, and you had some leaps as well, but I felt that on the next level, which was the professional level, it would have been tough.
Yeah, and listen, to this day, I still wish my dad taught me to play on the field, or to be a shortstop in baseball. Now, here's something. You mentioned as goalkeepers. One of my favorite teams, Manchester United, who lost this weekend. They lost to Liverpool, which is the best team in the English Premier League.
Best team in the world.
In the world, yeah. And what a coach.
Wow, Jurgen Klopp. I love Jurgen Klopp, by the way.
How can you not love that guy?
The guy talks about his team. My team is crazy. I don't understand what they're doing. Gegenpressing. I mean, you know, why? That's a guy I want to play for. Absolutely. And the team, 91 out of 93 points. Two ties during the year. You remember the Invincibles, Arsenal?
Yeah.
That went the whole season undefeated. I think the 12 to 14 ties. This team might go undefeated and might go into the history as the best team ever. If they can win the EPL and they can get to the finals and win the Champions League again back-to-back, wow.
What a team. That guy Salah is a beast.
Salah, Firmino.
Egyptian player, right?
Mane, you know, their front three is probably the best in the world. Firmino,
he is so strong.
For the Brazilian national team, the Egyptian international scored a goal against Man United over the weekend, and Mane may be the best of the three.
He had a really
on
bad
left side. I mean, unbelievable. Ronaldo, and then, hey, VVD. If you ain't Dutch, you ain't much, Dougie. Virgil van Dijk. Virgil van Dijk is the real deal. Unbelievable.
That's the guy who scored the goal,
best
right?
center back in the world.
Ah, yep. He's a beast.
Yep.
And since we're on that conversation of crosses, here we have a guy who's considered one of the greatest goalkeepers, if not one of the best goalkeepers currently in the world, De Gea. De Gea.
Yep.
Right? From Spain.
Yep.
He's what? Six what?
6'4".
6'4".
Maybe 6'5".
Probably the best, and I heard it said, he's probably one of the best shot blockers ever. Like, and the, you know, shoot, like if you take this guy, talk about reflexes, his feet, hands, the guy can leap like a fucking gazelle, and he's 6'4 already, right? And all that. But when it comes to crosses, he's horrible.
Yep, he is horrible.
He is horrible. Was it a few weeks ago, the ball came and he dropped it, and you know what I mean?
He costs Man United 8 points single-handedly this year, which is more than any other goalkeeper in EPL, which is a very interesting stat. He still performs well for Spain, but with Man United this year under their new manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he's struggled, quite frankly. And people think the game might have passed him by with that height, with those reflexes. He should be able to get the crosses, but it almost seems like that he's misjudging the flight of the ball.
I think he's scared. Flailing at it's got to be a fear thing.
And that might be a good point too, Dougie, because you know as well as, and that was one of your great qualities, you went where it hurt. You knew you wouldn't get battered by a forward. You get your knees up, and he said, you know what, I'm going to take my defender out, I'm going to take the forward out, but I'm going to get to that ball. And I love that mentality. Jurgen Klopp would love to have you on his team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had to make up for that height, you know.
Correct.
I remember playing at Flagler. We played University of Tampa, and I had come out for a couple crosses, and they saw me 5'9", the goal. They were trying to hit, and they had all these tall guys in University of Tampa. And I would come out, and they were like, until the second half, what they did was they sent a guy to pick me. This guy ran straight into me when I came out for this one cross. Like, we both just floored, and they scored. And Mullins was still like, yeah. Fucking pulled me that week.
Bobby Mullen.
And I sat on the bench for the season. I made it to the top, and then that's why I ended up transferring to Nova. Now, as a coach, when you see that, okay, when you see that is happening on, again, great talent, a great goalkeeper, can save the game, you know, with a big save, like he, you know, but at the same time, a mistake. What do you do?
Well, I mean, those are ideal situations because most teams now, have quality depth in all position. They got Claudio Bravo, who's, by the way, the starter for Colombia, if I'm correct, Colombian national team, and has played some games due to injuries, and in the FA Cup, Man United normally, you know, switches goalkeepers as well. I think it's now time to put your arm around De Gea and just say, hey, you know what, you need a little break. You've played so many games. The Euros are coming up for Spain again. Let's give Bravo an opportunity. And that's a good way for you to make that switch. And if Bravo does well, then you can look at the game and say, you know what, we haven't lost with him, so sorry, you're going to sit. Or you give him those two or three games where he can just sit back and analyze his game and through information of the goalkeeper coach, maybe get better, braver, whatever it needs to be.
Yeah, it's typical. You could just see it. Like, you know, you could see it in his eyes. That, you know, the goal they scored this weekend, they got scored. It was just inside the 6-yard box.
Correct.
It was a great curling ball, which was made even more difficult.
Yeah.
But I, you know, as a goalkeeper who had to overcome that nonsense, when I see a guy 6'4" standing on his line, oh, it irks me. By the way, Matt Adams, who played with FIU,
Matt Adams, all right.
By the way, says have Thomas tell some Cruyff stories now. Many of the people watching the show don't know much about soccer, but Johan Cruyff from Holland. You're from Holland.
Yes.
You played on the Holland national team.
Yep.
You played for Ajax, right? Is that what it's how to pronounce it?
Ajax,
sorry. Yep. I want to make sure I didn't screw that up.
Downtown Amsterdam, baby.
Ajax, you played, you know, and you came, one of the top five players in the world ever?
I would say top three. Until Messi and Ronaldo retire and they get in the top five, top three as well. If Messi wins the World Cup, it'll probably be the best ever. Right now, I say no. I still say Pele, Maradona, and Cruyff at number three. Cruyff revolutionized the world, revolutionized the game. In late 60s, Ajax went to four consecutive European championships, won three. They beat Inter Milan. They beat Real Madrid. They beat Man United. They rolled over into the 74 World Cup when they went all the way to the finals. They spanked. We spanked Argentina. We spanked Brazil. Lost, unfortunately, against Germany in the 74 World Cup. And that's when total football Clockwork Orange, that's where it came from, got established. That's when Cruyff and the coach, Rinus Michels, who brought me to the United States, went to Barcelona. They built La Masia. There was no La Masia, with their own hands. And I remember Cruyff saying to me, TR, or Thomas, size doesn't matter. And that's all of a sudden you see Iniesta, Xavi, Messi, smaller players doing well for Barca. If it wasn't for Cruyff, to me, the most influential person in the last 100 years as a player, as a coach,
what was
and
his stature?
As a manager. You know, pretty incredible that I was able to spend 2 years with him, play with him, and actually live with the family for a few years. Actually, a great story is I'm in Washington, D.C. I got traded, and I got traded because I partied too much. That was the coaches. So I got traded to the Washington Diplomats, where Johan Cruyff played. They picked me up in the airport. They said, Thomas, stay with us for a few days, and I'll find a place. 6 months later, I'm still there. Like, this daughter goes, Mommy, T.R.'s got a bigger penis than Daddy, you know? I mean, I was almost like the fourth child of
them. Well, there's a story for you there.
And here I am with the best player in the world, my hero when I grew up, obviously, Ajax, the national team in Barcelona, what he's done as a player and as a coach. And about three home games, because I didn't have a car, you know, Johan says you go home, I would go home. His wife goes, are you gay? What do you mean? Are you homosexual? I go, no, I'm not. Why, you know, don't you go out? I go, well, I don't have a car. If Johan says go home, we have to go home. Johan, didn't you win a car last year, the goal of the year? He went, yeah, where is it? I don't know. So I ended up finding this Mustang that he won. It's 0 miles on it. So I'm cruising. It's 4 a.m. Just before I open the door, I go, oh, no, they got two big Doberman pinschers. Make a long story short, they were kidnapped in Barcelona when he was on a road trip, and that was one of the reasons that scared them. They got away without having to pay anything. Police saved them, but they went to the United States to get away from the Barcelona kidnapping situation.
The gypsies.
But they had two Doberman killer pinschers, basically, to protect them in the United States. So they knew me, but I go, wow, if they bark or they attack me, I'm going to wake them up. So I fall asleep. Somebody wakes me up the next day and goes, you live with the Cruyffs, don't you? Yeah. Why don't you have breakfast with us? We'll live next door. So I go next door. It's 4 or 5 guys, but 7 or 8 women. It's a big house. People are walking. Cruyff comes in and goes, we got to go to practice. So I get in the car. He goes, you know who you just breakfast with? I said, no. He said, the Kennedy family. I went, oh, okay. So Ted Kennedy liked me and went like to Johan, can I take him out every Thursday night?
No joke.
So I would roll with Ted Kennedy on a Thursday night in a limo, literally to little places, knock on the door, little, oh, it's Ted, we can go in. And I'm telling you, man, as soon as the door closed, everything was possible. Oh. We would drive from Washington, D.C. to Studio 54 to just to hang out there with all these stars. Crazy, crazy times, but a true story. Pretty incredible. I get caught one day swimming in the pool to the other next-door neighbors. Hey, what are you doing there? I go, Johan told me I could swim in there. He goes, oh, okay. So I go back and go, somebody screamed at me. Well, yeah, the Rockefellers, they're sometimes home,
Jesus,
you know?
Jesus, God.
So it's the Kennedys and the Rockefellers and the Cruyff, and I'm going up and down in an elevator to get to the third floor. That's where my room was. So those were great times, by the way. 1980, baby. 80,000 people in giant stadium.
How old are you around that time here?
I was young. I came here when I was 21 in 1979, whereas most great players were in their 30s.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for those of you listening, and Matt, if you caught it, TR has a bigger penis than Cruyff.
Correct. But that doesn't necessessarily mean that,
yeah,
that's
not like
a lot.
Not
you
like,
know?
Yes, I don't
you
know.
Haven't seen Cruyff's penis.
I haven't seen Cruyff's penis.
No.
But many
by the way.
From what I was going to say, was
bless his heart.
You know, now I'll be honest. We all shower. We, you know, the Swedes and everything in college. We had locker rooms kind of at Nova, and a very intimidating locker room. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
You know, we have, you know, I think, who was the one guy, the Swede guy who had a bat? That was Magnus. Was that his name, Magnus?
Magnus, yeah.
Magnus. Oh,
Magnus.
My God.
Correct, exactly.
And Mo. Little Mo.
Mo also, yeah. But Mo was like an elephant with holding a nut.
It looked like a fucking trunk.
Yeah. Trunk with holding a nut.
And Mo was like 5'3", 5'4". He's like 5'6". He was a short statured guy and comes walking out of the shower like, hey, dude.
Yeah. I totally got it why some Americans didn't want to shower with some of the Swedes. You know, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Not good for your ego.
No, it's not, man.
No. I surrounded myself with assistant coaches with smaller penises. That was my whole deal. Yeah. I didn't care if they could coach, yes or no. It made me feel good.
You had your own.
You guys want to take a shower again, guys?
Yeah. You had your own casting couch.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, coach, why are we sitting on this couch? Just take your pants off and answer these questions about
You're
free
sick,
kicks.
Sick, man.
Now, yeah, you mentioned great players. You mentioned a few. Living now, like Messi
Well, as you know, I'm a talking head, an analyst for both beIN Sports USA and CBS. So last weekend we have the rights to La Liga, so we do mostly Real Madrid and obviously Barcelona games. Ray Hudson, my former teammate, and Phil Shane are the team to call the games, and I do the analysis after the game. So we had an hour last night live from 5 to 6, and we talked about the first game under their new manager, because they just fired Valverde and brought in Kiki Setién, who, by the way, is a great admirer of Johan Cruyff.
Yeah.
And Messi scores the winner. It's 1-0 against Malaga. And that's an interesting one. They're so different. Ronaldo, you look at Ronaldo's physique. He takes great pride, just like Zlatan, in staying fit and being strong. And they both have evolved. You got a smaller player like you, low center of gravity, great technical ability. You got the killer instinct of Ronaldo, both in the air and with his bicycle kicks. Both incredible athletes. Ronaldo now is fifth on the all-time goal-scoring list in the history of the game, and will surpass two in front of him. We'll get some very close to Pele. Messi will get there as well, because Messi's 2 years younger than Ronaldo.
He's not retired from the international game, playing for Argentina.
No, he's not. He's obviously, that's where he's been criticized, because he has not won the big one, which is the World Cup. Ronaldo has won the Euros with Portugal, not a World Cup with Portugal. Ronaldo's won some Champions League trophies, so has Messi. Ronaldo's played in four of the biggest leagues in the world and has done it there. Messi's only played for Barcelona. So it's a very interesting, you compare stats, you compare trophies, you compare style of play. And at the end of the day, they're very close. I would think, with a two-year difference, that when it's all said and done, Messi will become the best player ever in the game, you know, in 2 or 3 years.
Winning the big ones is that. And, you know, like you said, no, Portugal didn't win the World Cup, and they didn't really have a team ever to be considered to win.
Correct.
Where Argentina did. Argentina has been a favorite on a few different occasions. So,
and that's why people in Argentina still love Maradona over Messi.
Yeah.
Because Maradona won a World Cup. You remember the hand of God against England, but also that incredible slalom goal against England from his own half.
Yeah.
Oh, unbelievable.
That, you know, you think about the game, like somebody asked me once about the difference between Ronaldo and Messi. Messi's the kind of guy that could dribble through five people in an elevator.
Yep.
You know what I mean? He it's like the ball's on his foot.
Yep.
Where Ronaldo is almost would do, like, he needs to be space. You know, I mean, he's got the touch to dance, but he's just so fast and just
correct.
Quick. And, I mean, he's an explosive at lightning.
Totally different, but both absolutely brilliant.
Could they play together?
In what they do. Great players can play together, yeah, without a doubt. There's no need to do practices with those kind of guys, you know. I mean, you look at a great Barcelona team under Pep Guardiola in 2011-12. With Xavi, with Iniesta, with Busquets, with Piqué, with Messi, obviously, with Neymar, with, oh my God, you know, great players find ways to function without even having to talk to each other. You know,
how do you coach? Like it's always amazing. Like a lot of sports fans will say, you know, how do you coach a person like Michael Jordan? How do you coach? So in soccer, when you got that level,
I was very fortunate, Doug, that I touched some of the best players in the United States, and they're not Michael Jordans, but within soccer in the United States, they maybe are. I went to 320 World Cups. I was the head coach of our Olympic team in Beijing. I was the assistant coach in 98 in the World Cup, and I coached 4 MLS teams, including winning a championship with DC United, which I'm very proud of. Talking about that, I'm wearing the DC United shirt right here.
Yeah,
and let me shed this. It's a little warm in here.
Oh, I hope it doesn't get a flashback to the showers in the locker room.
Yeah, easy. we're going one step. I coached Freddie Adu. I coached Michael Bradley. I coached Jozy Altidore when they were 17, 18, and 19. And I coached Eric Winalda, Alexi Lalas in the 98 World Cup. So coaching talented players, and maybe not a great example, in when we won the championship in 99 in MLS with DC United, I had Eddie Pope, Carlos Llamosa, Jeff Agus, Diego Sonora, Richie Williams, John Horrocks, Marco Echeverry, one of the best players ever in MLS, yeah. Jaime Moreno, Roy Lasseter, all these guys of their respective country. We were five U.S. internationals that played in the World Cup, four guys that were from abroad that all played for their respective countries, be it Argentina, be it Bolivia, in the case of Marco Echeverry, El Diablo Echeverry. And the thing there is what Jurgen Klopp does so well. It's all about player management. Every coach now knows X's and O's, but can you push the right buttons? Do guys want to play for you? Do they want to go through a brick wall? The Liverpool guys look at Jurgen Klopp and go, come on, let's do this for Jurgen Klopp. And yes, there is a method to his madness, and obviously tactics are important, but I think it's really keep them happy, keep them sharp, allow them some freedom. It's not a democracy, but give them the opportunity to police themselves, so to speak, within the locker room and on the field, and they become then the extension of you from a tactical, but also from an emotional standpoint. If you can get to that point where the team almost self-functions and is critical of each other in a good, healthy way, wow, that's pretty cool. That's what happened in 99, and that's what happened in the 2007 World Cup, when actually we beat we beat Brazil in group play. Brazil had Marcelo, David Silva, Luis,
Carlos, Roberto,
yes, was also there. Then we beat Uruguay with Cavani and Luis Suarez on top. I had two college guys playing against these guys. I remember one from Wake Forest and one from Clemson, because not all players back then were professionals, but I also had a great access in Michael Bradley, Freddie Adu, and Jozy Altidore. Those three were unbelievable during that World Cup, and we did well. And I was happy to say that I can push those guys onto our Olympic team and our senior team. That was really my main function as the under 20 coach of the U.S.
Yeah, listen, I grew up, like, I had, my pops was my coach and this and that, but I didn't have, like, older brother. But my, the coach, to have a good coach and somebody you look up to and just be there, it's amazing. Like, when I have friends of mine that have kids, I'm like, you got to get them in sports, some sort of sport, because they got to get, that, you got to learn that camaraderie, how we all matter, how we all help each other, when something goes wrong, hey, come on, man,
Right.
I remember when we were at Novi at the national tournament, NAIA national tournament at Nova, and it was a fiasco because they just, the field was a complete shithole,
right?
They just completely screwed things up. But Woody Harrelson, yep, from Tyler, Texas.
Yeah,
we were playing. Woody. I think we were playing. Was it? That wasn't Westland. It was. I don't remember. Saginaw State. I think it was Saginaw,
yes,
who ended up winning the, yes, whole thing. I think that year.
Correct. I was the assistant. Hal Henderson was the head coach, yes, that year. Correct.
Yeah. Yep. And I remember there was a free kick just outside my goal, and they kicked it, and it hit Woody in the fucking head. He took the shot straight to the head. And somewhere at about the second half, there's like 8 minutes left, and Woody comes walking up to me after taking that shot. He goes, "Doug, what's the score, man? What's the score, Doug?" I don't remember. Yeah, and it was
your old Texan guy, exactly.
Yeah,
he probably back then we didn't know much about concussion syndrome, by the way. But Woody could barely talk, Dougie, right now. So that wasn't very. That was not fun to bring up that story, by the way. You might have to call him afterwards.
Yeah, well, by the way, congratulations to Woody. He was the first professional athlete ever signed at Nova University,
yep,
when he signed with you at the Fort Lauderdale Strikers.
Yep.
And then, of course, Rickard was on the team as well. You mentioned Freddie Adu. Now, this was a phenom. This was, mm-hmm, this he made the professional. He played a professional game in the MLS.
Yep.
Was he 15 or? 14 years old
when he signed the most lucrative contract of any player on any team, million plus, commercial with Pele, endorsement by Nike of a million plus, had not kicked the ball on the professional level, walked in that locker room. I remember vividly. I was at DC United as the head coach, and I'm telling you, sad story, but they looked at him and said, "Who the fuck are you?" They killed this kid physically, emotionally, just for the mere fact that they felt that he had not earned his stripes and was given so much money that understand in the fourth year of this league, where there was guys like Eddie Pope, who played in three World Cups, who made $28,000 in 96, 97, and Freddie Adu, because MLS thought he was the savior, he was the next Pele.
Yeah.
They deemed him. They put him in such a tough position that he could only fail, and that did happen.
Now, is he playing? Or
the 2007 World Cup bailed him out when he played for me. And Benfica came in with a $5 million offer. I told his agent, don't do it. He's not ready for that level. He's not ready to go abroad alone. They did sign it because the agent got a nice fee. Played one game, played for the reserves, got loaned out three times, ended up playing in Greece, ended up playing in Scandinavia, came back to MLS for half a season, played in the NESL. His last stint actually was with Eric Winalda, in for the Las Vegas Knights, which is a USL team, which is like the second division underneath MLS, but he got cut there as well a few weeks ago. So he's without a team and still in his late 20s. It's a sad story.
It is. You know, sometimes that, you know, it, like in comedy, okay, we have a, sometimes, you know, you get a, like a overly zealous MC of the show, and they start saying, and now the next guy's coming up. He's super funny. You're going to love this. He's the funniest guy I know. And you're like, oh, Jesus, just fucking say my name, dude. You know, I don't need all this nonsense.
Right.
One of the things as a coach, you can remember, we had the Swedes and I had a conversation of it. You know, Thomas was not the kind of coach that would just sit back and go, hey, you guys figure it out. I mean, he'd get up there and he'd pick and run into you. He'd step on you. And the famous quote was always, get stuck in.
Yeah, that's right.
The back of the hand, back of the hand to the other hand, get stuck in. And, you know, and he was a beast. And
I played that way because I was limited in my skills. Similar to you, you knew your strength and weaknesses. One of your great strengths was being brave. And I remember vividly in my first practice, Johan Cruyff looks at me and goes, you are an okay player, but don't think you got any really great skill. Win the fucking ball, play it to me, and just stand still. That was Cruyff. I went, okay, fair enough. I'm not that good. I just got to win. And I was good in the air. And so those were things I was trying to bring to a team as well. You know, that was important, setting an early tone for the team and being aggressive in the right way and getting stuck in. Those were old terms that I don't use anymore, but back then I did. I remember it. I've evolved as a coach as well.
Yeah.
I was probably too much hands-on, Dougie, back then. I learned from that. I became more of a manager 20 years later in the MLS and let my assistant coaches handle practice and make some adjustments here and there, come in on day of the game, announce the starting 11, and laid out the tactical concept how to play in that particular game. So, you know, you go from Nova Southeastern where you put out your own cones to coaching the Olympic team where you have three assistant coaches who can do it all for you, you know.
How great is that, though?
Yeah, I mean, that's great.
You know what I mean? You got to think about it because that was one of the things, like, I was telling my wife, we came to see when you're in this coaching over here and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh, my wife, you know, it looks good when your wife, in front of your wife, hey, he knows my husband, you know. This is good. I picked the good one, I guess. You know what I mean? But, you know, you said something earlier, to know what your abilities are and not.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I talked to kids, I said, to know oneself is to know God.
Mm-hmm.
That's an expression. It was my mantra when I turned 30.
Yep.
And if you really know what you're capable of, not capable of, right, and own it and not get pissed about it, not get mad at somebody for a reason you don't have it, you just deal with it, and you deal with it the best you can.
That applies to life, applies to sports, I think, applies to most things in life. You're absolutely, you know, the common sense theory, the theory that you just aspire to know your strength and your weaknesses, stay away from your weaknesses. The word respect now, you know, has become more respecting the game, respecting yourself, your teammates, but also opponents. Those became important things when I pushed younger players to become better and represent our national team in the World Cup. You know, there's more than just having a great skill set. This here, up here, becomes very, very important. The mentality of like Michael Bradley is a winner, for instance. And then I've met guys that I knew would be losers on the next level because they were soft mentally. They were, you know, if they didn't start, they never really understood. They didn't do any self-analysis. As you said, that's important, knowing your strength and weaknesses. So that makes sense.
Yeah, Bradley, who I think is a great player, you know, he's the son of who was a coach of the national team.
Yep.
I think he had a bad last showing in the World Cup.
Yeah, he did. He did.
I think he looked a little hesitant. He looked a little...
The last World Cup, we first time in, what, 20 World Cups or 20 years that we didn't make it to the World Cup. We all know Jurgen Klinsmann was there, got fired. Bruce Arena came in. We needed a tie
Is it Costa Rica?
In TNT. I'm in Sydney, Australia, watching Australia versus Iran because the fourth place team in CONCACAF would have played in a one-off game to see if they can get to the World Cup. We were in third, just needed a tie. We ended up losing against... I remember boarding a plane in Sydney to go to San Francisco, and the Wi-Fi goes out. I arrive, I look at my phone, and the score of the U.S. pops up. So I'm going, fuck, we lost. Saying that, listen, Mexico only needed a tie, and Costa Rica needed a tie as well. Now I go to Costa Rica and Mexico, they both lose. And I'm going, oh, my God. I go to my wife, I said, listen... Thank God we went and watched Australia because we're playing Australia in one-off. And she goes, no, we dropped the fifth. We're not even going to the World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
That was early 2018 when we didn't make it to the World Cup. Now we have Greg Berhalter, a new head coach, younger players, in Christian Pulisic being maybe the most
famous one. He's probably the best
one.
American player now, you think?
Yeah, plays for Chelsea, has been injured lately, but had a great run, scored some goals. We get some players in the Bundesliga right now that are young as well. Weston McKennie, obviously, is a guy that plays for Schalke, plays in the Champions League.
I like the new team. Last few times I saw them, the young team, they look hungry. They look like they're really out there to, you know.
Yeah, I think Rick Berhalter will do a good job. Yeah. You know, we need to get to the Olympics. That's important. Talk about the Olympics when we went to Beijing. Those are great experiences for those players.
Yeah.
We haven't gone to the Olympics the last two, which is almost 10 years now of lack of development in big games. Be qualifying and the Olympics now in soccer are big as well. The Neymars of the world are playing in it. Messi played in it. Won an Olympics with Argentina. So I hope that Jason Kreis, who's now the head coach and also the technical director with Inter Miami, that he can get his team to the 2020 Olympics and then obviously 2022 in Qatar. That's the focus of Greg Berhalter to get this young team to get to 2022 in Qatar. And then when they're in their prime of their careers, because they're all now 18, 19, 20, 21, by 2026, when we host the World Cup, which has been announced already, Canada, us, and Mexico, but during the games in the U.S., that team will be in its prime and maybe can make a run
to win it. Yeah,
make
it be competitive. Yep. Absolutely. Speaking of competitive, how do you feel you caught up in this story about Major League Baseball and the cheating of the Astros, stealing the signs? I mean, I don't think somebody asked me this. Could that happen in soccer? I'm like, no, it's too fluid of a game. Where baseball and stuff, where there's stoppages and there, you can't cheat in soccer.
No, you try. I've done that.
Yeah.
I always hired one assistant coach that spoke his languages fluently. So depending on where we were in the world, he could go and talk French to somebody and find his way into an under-20 French practice the day before we had to play him. So I had a little feel of how they would play, what the starting 11 was.
All right, but that's really not cheating. That's kind of like doing your due diligence.
South America. Well, I mean, we climbed some fences to get to certain places because most of those are closed. The day before the game is holy, and practices are closed, and that's where you do your set pieces, for
instance.
And you don't want anybody to spy on you. But I'll get out a little. You get a little camcorder back then. I was bending the rules. You know, I mean, why not?
Is it because you can, or is it because hey, everybody else is doing it? Or
no, it's just added knowledge. At the end of the day, I also realized I did that for about 4 or 5 years, and then went like, who cares?
Did it really help? In other words, did it really add?
No, it didn't, Doug.
Getting your pants caught in the fucking in the fence post.
yeah, correct. Well, it's not worth it, to be real honest with you. And at the end of the day, as I said again, you have a pretty good feel for what this team could do. You watch tapes of their last games, but there's something still that you say, maybe I can find some set piece that they're rehearsing right now
that
I might not know about that could surprise us a little bit. So You try to push the envelope.
By the way,
as
I've doctored up some of my own set pieces. I think are pretty good.
I'm sure. Yeah,
I've got it. It's a lot of
There's a lot of
There's a lot of things going on.
A lot of things that I mean, that's great. Setting picks, setting shielding, doing running into the goalkeeper for instance, like that happened to you.
I come on the field, for example, for the U.S. national team at this age of 52. Just before they put me in the wall, and I just pull everybody's pants down. All right, let's break away from soccer because big things are happening now.
I'll give
in your
you a
life.
Thumbs up for that one.
Thank you, buddy.
Or I could give you this is better, actually. Yeah.
Now, why are you carrying around hand?
A wooden hand?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? I brought it for you. I even put something on there. It's a little late now, but happy and healthy 2020 from TR. Here we go.
Oh, thanks, man.
And you can do any sign you want. You remember that sign the surfers do all the time? What is it called again? Calabunga. Absolutely. Calabunga, baby.
That's nice.
Here you go, Dougie.
Enjoy. Thank you, man. And oddly enough, it looks like one of the Swedes' penises size. Memories from the... That's awesome. Thanks, buddy. All right. So so here's the thing I was going to ask you, too. So from playing professional soccer, hanging out with the Kennedys in your 20s, living that life, then coaching, right? And now broadcasting, which, you know, look at me. Where have I come from? With comedy, fighting, radio, comedy. You know what I mean? It's crazy
pretty
how
crazy.
Things just go straight.
Well, but there's a lot of things happening here. Here you go. This is me at the Strikers.
Oh,
nice.
Great.
This, for instance, is...
This looks more like me than you, by the
here
way.
Here you go. This is... Well, not for you, but by the way, I need those back.
Oh, I thought they were mine.
You know, a little bit of history here. You know, I mean, last game at RFK, I got some dirt.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, yeah. And then they got it down, RFK Institution. Here you go. Won best documentary in the film festival. Next goal wins.
Oh yes.
And Michael Fassbender is playing me.
This is the movie about you.
Yes.
Now this is what's the title or it hasn't come out yet.
Next goal wins.
Okay.
So listen to this. So I get fired by U.S. Soccer because I didn't beat Guatemala to go to an under-20 World Cup in 2012. I still had a year left of my contract. So the president goes, "TR, I had a great relationship with him. I'd been to three World." Under-20 World Cup. It was time for me to move on anyway. He goes, "God, can you help me out?" I go, "What's up?" "Well, we have an enclave or whatever it's called, like Puerto Rico, but it's called American Samoa." So I'm on the phone and go to my wife, Google American Samoa. So I go, "Yeah, well, so it is." And they're looking for a coach, for a month. She goes, "It's in Polynesia, next to Fiji." I go, "Okay, next to,
nice.
Next to Fiji, New Zealand. Yeah, I've never been in a part of the world." Absolutely, I go. I put the phone down, and I'm wearing a jersey right now. Right here, you go. They were the worst team in the world, Doug. Last in the FIFA rankings, 232. The last team in FIFA had not won a game in 2 decades. The worst ever defeat in World Cup qualifying history. 31-0 against Australia. And here I go.
You're the coach.
And I get there, and there's two British filmmakers.
Yeah.
And they go, "Would you mind if we continue to film? Because we are really interested in what makes these guys tick to come back each and every day. They're amateurs and get their heads handed to them." 22-0, 24-0, 18-0, 12-0. And just kept coming back with a smile on the face. Hair to hair, like the Palamulas of the world, The Rock. They're from American Samoa, just to give you an idea. And fast forward, they win their first game in 2 decades against Tonga. I won my first game as a head coach in a World Cup qualifying game for American Samoa. They went up 32 places in the FIFA rankings. And this documentary, which started at the Tribeca Film Festival, where it also won the best documentary, becomes a very famous documentary. So I travel the world to promote this movie. I'm in Tokyo, Japan, whatever, blah, 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 with a Fafa Fina. A Fafa Fina is a third gender. I was the first coach in the world to play a third gender in a qualifying game. She's now one of the highest females in FIFA, by the way, and obviously very popular in the LGBT community. A pretty crazy...
You said Fafa Fina.
Fafa Fina, yeah. That's
her name?
Fafa Fina is the translation, expression. Because in the Polynesian culture, Fafa Finas are very, very normal. So they had four boys. She was the fifth. And they said, "We're going to turn you into a girl." So she did all the chores of what a woman does. She has done a total...
what's that called? Makeover?
Yeah, but...
Transition surgery.
Correct.
Yeah, yes.
But as I said again, the first transgender to play in a World Cup qualifying men's game, Jaya Salua. after the Tribeca Film Festival, a guy walks up to me and goes, my name is, I didn't even remember, I'm going to make this into a real movie, and it'll be like the Jamaican bobsled team. I didn't really pay a lot of attention till 6 months ago, and a guy called me and goes, my name is Taki Waititi. I just finished Thor for Disney. By the way, it grossed $800 million.
Yeah.
He did Inglourious Basterds, Jojo Rabbit. He's like Tarantino, and he goes, I'm gonna have my Michael Fassbender, who by the way has won some Oscars, and was in 300 and Inglourious Basterds as well, play you. I go, what are you talking about? He says, yes, you remember I met you in 2012. I go, you're the guy? He goes, yes. So I googled this guy, the hottest, hottest filmmaker producer in Hollywood right now. Tells Disney, I'm not gonna make the Thor sequel, which is Ragnarok or something like that. I want to make this one. I wanted to do this for 6 or 7 years. I'm going to do it. They just finished. I went to Hawaii a few times to show Fassbender how to slide tackle. And this movie will come out somewhere fall. And he said, this is the most fun I've had on a set. I'll bet you this could be an Oscar movie.
How cool is that? All right,
so here I am. Michael Fassbender, who, by the way, in 300 looked like a flipping stud dude, is playing Thomas Rongen, a 63-year-old, in a real fucking movie. How crazy is that, Dougie?
Is he playing you back when you played, or is he playing you?
No, they're taking the documentary and turning it into a movie.
But in the documentary, you're coaching that team.
I'm coaching the team, correct.
So he's playing you as a coach.
Correct.
All right, not the young player.
No.
All right, but
how crazy is that?
That's great. And then, so I'm glad I got you here at the podcast now.
And that's why I wear my American Samoa
shirt
right here, because that's going to become a hot seller when this comes out. And by the way, I got a call from a very reputable journalist going, Thomas Rongen, I'm going to write a book about you, from Amsterdam to American Samoa, the life story. And Octagon reached out to me and said, we would like to represent you, Mr. Rongen, so we can get the book out at the same time the movie comes out. You tour the world with Fassbender, and rich thereafter.
You know, TR, you seem to be like, here you are in your 20s sleeping in a car. Next thing you know, you're schmoozing with the Kennedys.
Correct.
Right? Next minute, you know, you're working with soccer guys and teaching them and coaching a World Cup team. And next thing you know, you're going to be in a movie.
And I'm Dougie.
Oh, look at that. Your own shoe?
No, listen to this story. This is crazy, too. So 3 months ago, I can walk where I'm at to Las Olas and whatever. So I'm somewhere at the beach having dinner. It's about 8 o'clock. Guy sitting next to me, older. Well, I'm 63, a little bit older than me. How are you doing? I told him, I'm Jewish. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm from Holland. Oh, you were very, you guys were good to the Jews in the Second World War. I'm military Assad. Israeli scientist. I go, okay. He gives this to me. He goes, I used to put these in rockets, making sure that we blow shit up. I go, okay, sounds good. Then I put it on our female rowing team, and we won a gold medal because we can find torque and whatever. And then somebody said, you should put it on shoes. So now I'm telling you, Dougie, this is unbelievable. This is based on algorithms and gyroscopes. It's works indoors and outdoors. It gives you technical, tactical, and physical data. Crazy. And these guys, one of the CEOs that actually works in London was the number one sniper for the last 10 years for the Assad, which is the elite forces in Israel.
Yeah.
The guy was the founder of, I just sold my company. I go, really? Yeah, about $3.6 billion. I go, to whom? GM and Ford. I founded OnStar. Okay. I'm the owner of Waze. These Israeli guys are unbelievable, dude.
Yeah. They're.
So I'm running into this thing here, and ching, ching, I'm actually going to the U.S. national team in 2 days in LA to strap them. We call it, put this on, because everybody is now enamored by this new technology, which is crazy.
So that basically monitors, it's almost like an incredible Fitbit. It tells you everything, how you're running, how you're jumping, how you're moving.
And amount of touches, loss of possession, you name it, you got it. And it uploads the video within minutes as well without tagging, which is crazy.
Wow.
So, yeah, at 63, I'm doing a lot of interesting things, which I love, by the way, and including sitting with you and rapping a little bit about my life story. But things are good, dude.
That's awesome, man. And listen, because you always have to, right? Like, how could you, like people, like I said, people that back in the day, like, oh, you played soccer. Oh, you did this? Yeah, man. I always wanted to do something different. I was like, now my acting's my new thing, too. I actually was in a Sargento cheese commercial National Cheese commercial.
All right.
Yeah, and I'm actually, we're sitting here at a soccer game, and I'm yelling goal. So it's actually a little bit of both worlds. But that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, we go from saving George Best, which he writes in his second book, saved by two teammates, who was married at that time to Miss World, Swedish, late 79, early
George Best, we're talking
80,
about?
Yeah. And he used to own a bar called Besties, but George, again, bless his heart, who died because of
liver failure, right?
Yeah, alcoholism. Would go missing. And as good teammates do, Dougie, as you know, we would find him.
Yeah.
We would put him in bed. We'd wake him up the next morning. We'd take him to practice and hope that he will function because that's what you do for teammates. About the third time in, and we're in Manhattan Beach where he owned a pad next to the coach of the Seattle Seahawks. What's his name again? Pete Carroll. But sometimes the steps go up into the kitchen. That sounds crazy, but it's right on the Strand. So every time she would open the door, we'd bring him in. This one day, she opens the door, and she's got a butcher knife. Well, just imagine, like five times this size. She's probably about 6 feet away from us. She goes for his chest. Wim, my teammate, turns real quick. I turn with him, and she ends up stabbing him in his ass. And George Best is bleeding all over the fucking place, dude. So
yeah.
we're now getting to the hospital, hoping that the press doesn't find out what is going on. And they didn't, but you're right.
Was this when you guys played on the Strikers?
No, I played then for the Los Angeles Aztecs. I got traded to the Washington Diplomats, and then the Washington Diplomats folded, which Madison Square Garden and Sonny Werblin, who at that time owned the New York Jets. We used to hang out with Broadway Joe, who by the way lives in Fort Lauderdale now. And then they folded in 1980, and then the Fort Lauderdale Strikers picked me up. So I came here in the tail end of 80, 81, 82. Then Joe Robbie moved the franchise to Minneapolis. This crazy stuff is going on my head right now. So I'm in Minneapolis. I want to stay downtown. So Ray Hudson and I decided to stay downtown, although we played in the suburbs, both indoors and outdoors. And I see all these trucks next door. I go, what's going on? Oh, it's the Mary Tyler Moore show. I go, who the fuck is Mary Tyler Moore? Well, back then it was a big show.
Yeah.
So I gave her some tickets to the game. And like a few weeks later, she knocks on my door. She goes, you want to be my date? I go, yeah, of course. Yeah, no problem. She goes, I want to show you a phenom. I go, okay, phenom. All right. I'm not going to tell you what. So this is 1981, downtown Minneapolis. It's me and Mary Tyler Moore. We're walking into First Avenue. And who's playing live? Prince.
Wow.
He's from Minneapolis.
Yeah.
First Avenue is huge. We go backstage, introduced. He's very, you know, introverted and meek and stuff. And she actually goes, what do you like? I go, I love his jacket. And he gives me his jacket. I got a Prince jacket, dude.
No, you're kidding me.
Yes, I do.
Oh, dude.
1981 because of Mary Tyler Moore. I mean, how insane is that? And now here we are. It's just another story.
Well, we have a little bit. Like, I loved Prince growing up. And
me too.
I even played in a band in high school called Sightless Cry, where I was the lead singer. And I sang Prince. And
awesome.
I had a blue trench coat I made of my own to kind of, you know, look like that.
That was a blue coat.
It was a blue one?
Yep.
And you're going to keep that. You're never going to get rid of that.
Never.
I couldn't make you an offer?
No.
No? Like maybe 1,000 shares?
I've worn it.
You've worn it?
I wore it twice. Once at CBS, once at BN. So people could see it.
I can see everybody over there. What the fuck is Thomas? Catch a pee. Yeah. You should have started singing. That'd have been awesome. Well, what a story, dude.
You know what I mean? I know. Crazy.
Oh.
Crazy. We go from the Rockefellers to the Kennedys to Prince to Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, my God. Well.
Pretty insane.
Having
a guy making a movie about me.
I think that's the best. I really do. And I can't wait to see it. You know what I mean? And then you got to be, you know, you, and now you're going to be on set? Are you going to like? I was on set twice. Yeah, yeah.
To teach him, certain, there's a few, and it's still on Netflix and on Amazon. If people want to watch it, Next Goal Wins, people say, The Guardian is giving it 5 stars, Rotten Tomatoes was 100%, by the way.
Yeah.
So people liked it.
Well, it's a great storyline, right?
No, I mean, it is a great story.
Just, I mean, think about it. Like, you know,
And, Ducky, you appreciate this. The guy that gave up 31 goals against Australia, I brought him back, and he started in the win against Tonga. And this guy cried, Dougie.
Yeah,
this guy came up to me and said, you know what? My son is going to now look at me. Because he would walk in Seattle. That's where he lives right now.
Yeah.
And people would actually recognize, are you the guys that gave up 31 goals against New Zealand? And his son would go like, my son thinks I'm a loser. Now he knows I'm a winner.
Oh,
and that made me feel, that's awesome.
Just an amazing, because listen, when I was a goalkeeper, okay, and if you lost a game, it was bad, especially as a goalkeeper. You know, as a goalkeeper, you're weighing, the weight of the team is on your shoulders.
Correct.
You know, it's got to go through 10 other guys before it gets through you, but somehow, you know, if you didn't do as well or something,
the scars, you're still there.
I can still picture a ball going between my legs when I was 11 years old, in a big traveling game one time.
We just don't understand, I think, what goalkeepers go through, because it's so much different than field players. Because you're right, you're always in the limelight. You fuck up once, everybody will see it.
Everything happens at that pressure moment.
On the goalkeeper is tremendous, and that was one of the reasons why I brought this guy back. Actually, although there was a younger goalkeeper that might have been better, I felt for this guy's psyche and for the team's psyche, actually, because there was three or four other players that were part of that 31-0 that really took this to heart, and I'm so happy for them that they were able to win a game, and we tied actually the Solomon Islands, and then we lost against Papua New Guinea. 1-0 late. Otherwise, we would have gone into the final phase, playing the New Zealands and Australias in that region. You know, that might have been. I mean, I won an MLS Cup. Done a lot of things. That was the most rewarding coaching experience in my life.
I was going to ask you, out of all this, what's the, you know, what is the thing that
bunch of amateurs that love to play. I became cynical. You know, I got fired 3 or 4 times, Dougie. I was driven by fear of failure. In my early years, I only derived enjoyment, and the losses hurt more. The wins were just okay. Boop, let's next. You know, it wasn't fun anymore. And they showed me to love the game again, because they did, and they didn't get paid for it. I was just stunned by it. You know, and that whole culture is so cool, dude. It was great. I'm wearing skirts called Lava Lavas. I'm in churches. I'm never going to church because I'm an atheist. I cried because for the first time after 10 years, when I lost my daughter in a car crash. So, yeah, it was all cool, pretty cool stuff.
That's a great thing, man. That's just a great way to go. And you are in the position of taking it. You know, it's one of my favorite quotes ever was, fortune favors the prepared mind,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to be ready.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of times people say, oh, you're just lucky. Oh, you know what? You know, I had somebody say that to me one time about, you know, going in and playing soccer in college and stuff, and like, oh, you're just lucky, dude. I go, what do you mean I'm lucky? You're not around when I was studying it till 5 a.m. just so I could keep my grades up to play on the team. You know, you're not there when I was trying to do my homework on a fucking bus that was a piece of shit. Remember how many times that bus broke down? Fucking Ned. Remember we called him Ned. Remember the bus driver? We called him Ned.
Yeah.
You know why we called him Ned? You don't remember?
I don't.
The never-ending driver. We called the bus driver who did our fucking...
It seemed like a never-ending journey with that fucking cat.
That bus broke down so many times.
God, unbelievable. Those had the bunks in it, didn't they?
Yeah, remember we had the
sleeping. Yeah. Oh, my God.
We play cards.
Crazy.
Fun times. Well, it's been great to having you here, buddy.
Same here, Dougie. And, seriously.
Absolutely. And if you need any, like, chubby, like, Samoan guys in the next movie, I'll wear a wig or something.
I know you could do that. Absolutely.
But
by the way, I want to see this guy, by the way, not only me, but everybody. In his new next gig, all right, live for Dougie.
That's right. By the way, Tuesday, if you're in Port Salerno, you can catch me at the Twisted Tuna. I'm hosting our show with headliner Aaron Berg from New York City. Very funny. He's like the modern-day Don Rickles. This guy just rips the fuck out of people.
Right.
It's funny.
Port Salerno, all right.
And then Wednesday, we're going to be here right here in Coral Springs with Aaron Berg, myself, and Jen Hellman from the show right here.
I'll be here in Coral Springs Wednesday night. Absolutely.
That's at Visani's. And you can come out and meet Thomas and his hand and his dirt. Hey, I have to ask you. You would know this question. Somebody asked me what I want to do when I die. And I said, you know what? I want to be cremated. And I want my ashes spread in the goal at Trafford, Old Trafford.
Oh, my God. How cool is that?
Would they do that?
No.
Okay.
No, but I could do it for you.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
fuck, I'm just going to get tickets behind the goal. and make sure the wind is going that way, and have the gay doused with your fucking with your ashes. How good would that be?
Get like a leaf blower.
Correct. So how did the gay give up the goal? Well, let me tell you a story. Duggo made a diet, and his ashes we spread, but went into the gay's eyes, and that's why he gave up the 1-0 loss against Liverpool.
Half the team has Duggo.
Good, and
lungs.
He went like this to the rest of the crowd.
By the way, Galaxy says hi. Our friend Galaxy Robert
Galaxy,
says,
you're the best.
That's the best. Well, thanks for joining us, guys. And, of course, you got to check out the documentary, Last Goal Wins.
Next Goal Wins.
Next Goal Wins. Yeah, Next Goal Wins. It's great. And then watch for that movie coming out.
Yeah.
And if not, if you're in town, you want to meet, come out Wednesday night to Tavolino's for the comedy show.
Let's do it.
That's awesome. Thanks for coming, buddy.
Tavolino's, baby.
That's it. That's all we have time for here at the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Wake Up Dougie Show. Follow me at Instagram and Twitter at Dougie Dangerous. And check out my dates. Busy week this week. I said I'm also going to be in Jacksonville on Friday.
You get dates? I thought you were married.
No, like dates, like comedy dates.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about that shit.
Okay, don't. No.
So, go to Jack.
Can we double date?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome. We'll go out.
Sounds good, yeah.
Yeah, but we're not going to take showers together. I don't need to be embarrassed in front of my wife. But anyway, guys, go to DougieAlmeida.com for more dates and when I'm going to be coming around. So thanks for checking us out. God bless. And actually, we'll have a special show here Wednesday. With Aaron Burr here sitting in the studio. So it's been a great week for comedy here on the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Guys, thanks for joining us. God bless. And we'll see you here next time at the same spot.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.
They travel to the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. Thick beam of light hit the ground.